Got a Bible that you might want to turn to Matthew 20. We're going to get there in a little while, not straight away. Actually, I want to set us up for the passage we're going to look at. But we're starting a new series called Culture Shift, where we're talking about different values, different kingdom values that we need to look at every now and again. You know, these are values that most of us would recognize as being important, that we know a little bit about. But there are certain things about the world, about the culture that we inhabit today, that over time calls us to drift a little bit. Do you know what it is to drift? To lose focus on what is really important. And that is just normal. That is just life. It just sort of happens. So I want to talk about, and those that are preaching are going to be talking about these values over the next few weeks. And I recognize that, as the writer of Ecclesiastes says, there is nothing new under the sun. But his mercies are new every morning as well, aren't they? So we have to hold those things in tension. But you're not going to be able to say at the end of this series, I've never heard that before. Unless you've just given your life to Jesus, you know. But if we are truly going to be countercultural here at Encounter, if we are going to be truly kingdom-minded in who it is that we are and what it is that we attempt to do, then we have to revisit these areas from time to time. But as I get going, I want to begin with a little bit of interaction, because I like a little bit of interaction from time to time, and I need you to help me out here as we do this, okay? I want to give you some categories that you're going to vote on, and we're going to decide, or I'm going to make a guess at what we think is the greater or the better of these two options that are coming your way. And the world is divided down significant lines from time to time. So let's have the first one up. Are you a Coke person or a Pepsi person? Okay, so if you are a Pepsi person, raise your hand. Yeah, four or five of you. Okay, if you are a Coke person, raise your hand. Yes, yeah, so let's move on to the next one. I got that right. Coke is greater than Pepsi. All right, I'm not even sure how Pepsi... Neither. That is not an option. You've got to choose between the two, okay? Roger, don't get difficult now, okay? Here's a slightly more nuanced one. Let's go to that. Waffles or pancakes, okay? If you are a pancake kind of person, raise your hand. Oh, yes. There's not much division. If you're a waffle kind of person, raise your hand. One, two, three, four. Okay, we're going to do ministry for you later on. Although, actually, I have decided that some of us don't care at all, actually, Roger. You're right. As long as it's got chocolate sauce on, that's all we go for. No. Okay, the next one. This is a really significant one. Football or rugby? All right, so, if you are a football person more than a rugby person, raise your hand. Bless you. If you are a rugby person more than... Yeah, we are a rugby church. We are officially a rugby church. I just wanted to see your hands, but bless you, Brian. I still like football as well. This is much more divisive, okay, really. And this is the last one, okay. And I suspect there might be some preconceived notions about me when it comes to this. But if you love cats more than dogs, raise your hands. Yes, it's a... So his wife didn't even know. All this, how many years have you been married for? You can't be. No, Ingrid's right as well. You can't be, Richard, because it might just sway the whole thing. That was team. If you're on team dog, raise your hands. Praise the Lord. It's almost as conclusive as both hands up. Okay. But although we have to say that everyone is welcome in Encounter, even if you're going for a lesser option, okay, you're all welcome, okay? And you may wonder where this is going, but it has set us up for this passage that I want to look at in Matthew 20. Because there are some really powerful things that Jesus says here in the midst of a very interesting culture that I think really apply to us in this day and age. Okay, so in Matthew 20, verse 25, we read, Jesus called them together. That's his friends, that's his disciples, his close group of friends, okay? And he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Now, when Jesus said that in that moment, no one was shocked by this statement, okay? What Jesus is actually doing here is he's describing the world, he's describing the culture and the way that it works at that time. He's just saying, this is the way it goes. This is the way that it is, okay? The rulers, the Gentiles, lord it over people. You know, the high officials exercise authority over them. And essentially, what he's saying is that there is this equation for the way that the world works, the way that culture works, okay? It is that honor is greater than humility. Honor is greater than humility. Can we have the next slide? We'll come back to that in a minute. Honor is greater than humility. That is just what everyone believes. That's what everyone assumes, okay? That they go through life just assuming that honor is greater than humility. And Jesus lived in this period of time where this mindset was the prevailing culture. And it could be described as the pecking order of life. Now, when I was younger, we all had grandfathers when we were younger, probably, but I had a particular grandfather who was a slightly entrepreneurial and into all sorts of things, and for quite a season in his life, he was a farmer. And so every Friday night through to Saturday morning, my mother and father and my brother and I would go down to the farm, okay? And like many farmers in that era, which was when the dinosaurs roamed the land as well, they raised chickens. And so I remember going down to see the chickens, watching the chickens. And I have to be honest to say that, you know, ever since I've always been sort of fascinated by them. They are weird little things, aren't they? They're weird little animals, you know, watching the way they walk and, you know, watching the way they sort of make their noises and track food and insects. And, you know, but chickens have only one way that their entire society is ordered, and it's called the pecking order. That's what it is. So if you're a high-ranking chicken, you know, I've reached the top and I've got to stop and that's what's bothering me sort of thing. If you're the top of the pecking order, that means that you get all the food that you want whenever you want it. It means that you have all the space that you want whenever you want the space. It means you can strut your stuff whenever you want to strut your stuff. It means you do not have to worry about safety because you are the top of the pecking order. And if you're the bottom of the pecking order, then you are like a lower class chicken. It's not much fun for you, actually. And I would see this being worked out, this pecking order, on a Friday night when I was a little lad, okay, on a Saturday morning. And the ones at the bottom of the pecking order, they often seemed a little bit scared of the ones at the top of the order, or a little more lonely than the others. And if I was really pushing it and going off on one, I could say they were a little bit lower in self-esteem. And if I was a counselor, which I'm not, clearly, the ones at the bottom of the pecking order would be the ones that I was counseling, clearly. But that was the way that life was ordered for the chickens. Not necessarily, I know, honey. That's right. Just don't spoil the illusion I'm creating here. But the ones at the top bossed the little ones around, the ones at the bottom around. If the ones at the bottom thought they could get to the top, they too could then boss the others around. Anyway, I remember my grandfather used to try and teach us many lessons about life and from the farm. And I remember him sort of saying, what lessons could you learn from being a chicken? I can't remember anything at all. And I was thinking about it the other day when I was chatting to my mum, who came up on Monday on bank holiday. And I just sort of think I remember thinking, I wouldn't want to be a chicken. That was the lesson that I learned. Who would want to be a chicken, frankly? But in the time of Jesus, this is a good way of thinking how society and culture was ordered. There was this pecking order, okay? And everything was about rank and class. You know, life was viewed as a contest, as a competition. Everything was built around status and, you know, who's up and who's down. And in the time of Jesus, this worked itself out in really interesting ways, okay? And some of us will have heard of the author John Ortberg, who's written a number of amazing books. Some of you in your life group are studying an extraordinary book called Soul Keeping this coming season. It's an amazing book. But John Ortberg did a lot of research on this, and he talked about the different categories for the way in which status was represented in the time of Jesus. So clothing, for instance. During the time if you were of Jesus, if you were a free person, in other words, if you were not a slave, you could wear what they called the Phrygian cap, okay? It just meant as you wore this cap that everyone knew that you weren't a slave. If you were a citizen, and you could be a free person but not a citizen, okay? If you were a citizen, you went another step and you could wear a toga. And the togas they wore then were nothing like the togas we wore to parties when we were students, okay, all right, just old sheets that hadn't been washed, you know. People would know that that person was a citizen. The next class up is the equestrian class, okay, and not only did you get to wear a toga and a cap, but you got to wear a gold ring, so you actually had some bling as well, all right, so you were really even higher up the pecking order. And the next class up was the senatorial class, which meant that you had some real clout. So you had the cap, you had the toga, you had the ring, you had the bling, and then you had a purple stripe across your toga, and everybody wanted a purple stripe. There's a reason why bishops wear purple. Everyone wanted a purple stripe. So it wasn't just about clothes as well, though. Although that was a big part of it, it was also built around occupation. So if you were the elite, if you were the top of the rank, okay, it was all about owning land. And if you owned lots of land, then it also meant that you owned lots of slaves. And if you owned lots of slaves, that meant that you didn't have to do an awful lot of work, okay? If you were in the elite class, you never, ever did any manual labor at all. You never did anything with your hands, apart from eat, probably. And that was just part and parcel of being the elite class, and I can see by looking at you, some of you are drawn to that immediately. You know, not only was it about occupation and clothing as far as status was concerned, but your legal condition was reflected in your status as well. There was a law for those with honor, and there was a whole separate law for those who were humble. You know, for instance, Roman citizens could not be crucified. That was reserved for non-citizens. It was reserved for slaves. And crucifixion, which we'll be remembering in a little while, was known as the slave's punishment. Seating at public events was all about class. You know, in this day and age, you know, if you've got money, you can get seats near the front of the stage, can't you? At a Coldplay concert or whatever, or Gloucester, Kingsong, watching them play, okay? But if you were the higher class 2,000 years ago and you were a Roman citizen, you sat down near the front of the stage. If you were lower class, then you sat up in the gods, in the back, as it were. So when you went to a public event, everyone knew who you were based on where you sat, as it were. If you were lower status and you went to a party, okay, you could not speak to a person of higher class. You could not speak to them, okay, unless they'd spoken first. But if you were a lower class person and you were in the middle of a conversation, you could be interrupted by a higher class person whenever they wanted to. So all of life is structured around this simple equation that honor is greater. Honor is better than humility. Recognition is greater. Status is greater. Being high up the ladder is greater. That's what it's all about. That's the world that Jesus lived in. That's the culture that he's embracing. And that's the world that he speaks into here as he turns everything upside down. So he calls his friends together and he says, you know the way it works? You know that the rulers of the Gentiles order over them and that their high officials exercise authority over them. And everyone who's listening to Jesus is going, yeah, that's right, we do know, okay? You know, a Roman citizen would not have thought that this was a derogatory statement at all, okay? They would have said, that's us, that's the way it goes, that's the way it works, okay? That's how we do life, that's how we pursue excellence, okay? That's the way we've structured everything. And then these next four words that Jesus speaks changes everything. He's saying, you know the way that it works? There's this way of life, but not so with you. Not so with those of you that want to be part of my community. Not those of you that want to follow me. Not those of you who want to follow Jesus. Not those of us who say that we are Christians. We're going to do life differently. And he goes on to describe it, and he says, instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And people listening to this, they must have had fuses going off in their brains. You cannot be serious. You've got to be joking. I've got to be a servant. And whoever must be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. So what Jesus does here is he's introducing a whole new equation for life. And he's actually saying that humility is greater than honor. We're going to do life differently. If you're going to be with me, if you're going to follow me, we're going to do life differently. And Jesus was so convinced about this that he wanted to leave a physical representation of this for them. Jesus was a brilliant, brilliant communicator. He was a brilliant teacher. You know, he just understood that people learned through experience, actually. And they didn't just learn through talking, as it were. So he creates this illustration for them that they will never, ever forget. So what's he talking about? This is what he does. If you flip over to John 13, okay, John chapter 13. Verse 2. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. And Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God, and he was returning to God. And I find this really, really fascinating. I know that I've shared it already in the last sort of 8 months, but it's only struck me afresh how powerful this is. But all of a sudden, Jesus has all power. And he hasn't had all power up until this point, but he has it in this moment. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. And I think that there is this idea that sometimes for us that we think that humility means emptying ourselves of all power. That is not true. At least it's not true in this verse. It's not true of Jesus. Jesus realizes in this moment that he is full of power. So humility is not necessarily emptying yourself of power. Humility is not necessarily emptying yourself of your influence or your rank or your position or the giftedness that God has given to us. Humility is understanding that power, that any influence that we have, that any position that we have, that any resource that we have, that all of that has been given to us for a reason. It's been given to us for a purpose. So what does Jesus do with all this power? He got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, wrapped a towel around his waist, and after that he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. It's extraordinary. It's actually crazy, really. Jesus realizes that he's been given all power, and the first thing he does is what? He takes off his outer garment. Remember the garment that symbolizes status and honor? And he wraps a towel around his waist, which is the uniform of a slave. And he gets down and he washes the disciples' feet. And this is an incredibly significant moment, and I recognize that it would be very weird in our culture today. Okay? If I bumped into you as I was walking down North Street on Tuesday morning and said, "Would you mind if I washed your feet?" That would feel strange, wouldn't it? But in Jesus' day, it was actually an incredibly common task. It was just an important part of hygiene in Israel. You know, everyone walked around in sandals. And if you want a biblical mandate for wearing sandals, they weren't wearing socks in those days. Okay, so no socks with sandals. But he's wearing sandals, and it's full of mud everywhere. It's dirty. There's poo everywhere. Donkey poo, camel poo, every sort of poo there, okay? And the interesting thing is that nobody of a higher class or a higher rank ever washes the feet of someone of a lower class. It's always a slave's job. And even for a slave, actually, it's a demeaning task. There was actually a law in Israel that no slave could be forced to wash somebody else's feet. And no one had ever heard of a rabbi washing the feet of their disciples. It just never happened before. But what Jesus is saying is, hey guys, I just need you to get this. I just want you to get this. We're going to start this community, and it's going to be different. It's going to be different to the rest of the world. You know, I'm going to turn everything upside down, because now the way up is actually down. the way to honor is through serving. And he washes their feet. And in this little community, there is no pecking order. So I've been thinking about this quite a lot, thinking about this series for some time now. And I'm wondering whether there could ever be this kind of community again, really. You know, if a group of people partnered together and said, do you know what? We would love to see an epidemic of humility here in the Cotswolds. And if there was just praying for an outbreak of humbleness, humility, and servant-heartedness, a freedom from this self-preoccupation that we carry in our culture with all these things that don't really matter in the same way that the kingdom does. If we actually said to ourselves, if I said to myself, I'm going to go through today, we're going to go through today with an attitude of humility. And I don't know, honestly, if I'm being really honest, we find it hard to wrap our minds around the concept of humility, don't we? Really? You know, it's really hard to develop humility unless you've been humiliated. And who likes the idea of being humiliated? If you've been there, it hasn't necessarily been the most enjoyable experience of your life. But what could this look like, really, in everyday life? So here's what I think about when I, or here's what I wonder about, really, when I think about humility in action. I wonder whether humility in action is the desire to stop impressing and to start investing. I just want to talk a little bit about this idea of, begun my descent, this idea of stopping impressing. And I jotted down a few things that might be true for me, that might be true for you. I don't know. But maybe it means for me that I have to give up this notion that I have to know it all. Anyone else ever been there? Karen's laughing. You can tell which ones apply to me because she's going to laugh at them and go, it's you. They're all me, probably. They're all us, actually. But I have to give up this idea that I have it more together than I really do. You know, how are you, Mike? I'm fine. Yeah, right. Maybe I have to give up this idea that I have to do everything really well all the time. Because it creates an oppression over me that in the end can be destructive. I have to give up this thing that's inside of me that sometimes occurs. I know it doesn't happen to anybody else here, okay? But sometimes, because you want to feel better about yourself, you feel the need to put somebody else down. Anyone else ever done that? No. Just the two of us. Okay. So, think about this, okay? Think about this. Sometime tomorrow, or this coming week, we are going to be tempted to impress somebody with our accomplishments. We are, okay? Whether with it's our spirituality, our maturity, you know, something that's impressive that we've done, okay? Something like that. And you're going to be in a conversation with somebody and you're not really going to be listening to the conversation. Do you know why you're not really listening to the conversation? Because you're thinking about what it is that you can say to them when they finish talking. Because you want to impress them with what you're going to say. No, that's three of us now here. I know you're thinking, what should I say to Martin? No, no. You know what I mean, okay? You know, but you know, I'm just wondering whether in that moment we caught ourselves and we reminded ourselves of the words of Jesus. Not so. Not so with you, Mark. Not so with you, Ingrid. You know, I'm not going to do that. So I'm not going to throw that out so that I can control that other person's impression of me. I'm not going to do that. It is impression management. You know, we're all schooled in the school of impression management. They don't give degrees out in this, but most of us have them, actually. You know, some of us are working on our PhDs, but you know. Actually, it did strike me when I was thinking about that, how much we could cut down on our conversation if we just stopped thinking about what we were going to say next and actually listen to what was being said, because actually what was being said might be what we were going to say in the first place, and just give up trying to make people think really good things about us all the time, frankly. It takes a lot of pressure off you. I have discovered this, actually. Really, it's incredible. This coming week, it's just possible that we might be tempted to judge somebody that they like cats more than dogs or something else. We might be tempted to pass evaluation on somebody who did the wrong thing or said the wrong thing or wore the wrong thing, and we are going to be filled with joy when they do it because we're going to be able to go and tell somebody else about it because they just need to know. They just need to know this. But what if we stopped and we took stock and we remembered the words of Jesus? Not so with you, Mark. Not so with you. Not so with me, because I am a follower of Jesus. I don't have to run around trying to establish myself in the pecking order of life at somebody else's expense, okay? You know, just because there are people that are ahead of me. Not so with you. Because if we're going to call ourselves followers of Jesus, then we're going to do life differently. Stop impressing. Give up on impression management. And let's start investing. How can we do that? How can we start investing? Okay, a couple of things, ideas. There's so many things, but just a couple. You know, the first one is when it comes to humility, maybe we could think about time. Because when I look back over my life, actually, which I've done a lot of in the last few years, I recognize that I saw pride rearing its ugly head in my life more and more in and around the management and the selfishness around my time, perhaps more than any other category in my life. So what do I mean? What's going to happen to many of us tomorrow, okay, is that we're going to be going through life and we're going to be accomplishing things. We're going to be doing the things that we want to do because that's who we do. We accomplish things. That's what we do. We want to go through the day and get things done. But what's going to happen to us is that someone is going to get in our way. Someone is going to delay our accomplishment of whatever it is we're trying to accomplish. It might be a 2-year-old toddler who happens to live in your house and won't go to sleep. It may be, it doesn't happen around here, I know, but it may just possibly be where you live, a slow driver waiting to turn out of a junction. It may be somebody at the checkout of the new supermarket in Bishop's Cleeve who is new at their job and they're not quite operating at the speed or the level you'd like them to be operating at or getting at. And frankly, you're going to find yourself getting frustrated, a little bit mad, because someone is standing in the way of us trying to accomplish our agenda or to get done what we want to get done. But not so with you, Mark. Not so with you, Mary. Not so for those of us that want to be part of this different community that Jesus has created. How about our money? Do you know what? Generosity truly creates humility in our lives. I really believe that. I have not talked about this here in the time that we've been here, but and some of you that are new to this church, but we have a fund here in this church called the Dorcas Fund. And it's a fund that we use here to bless other people. People perhaps who, for whatever reason, are struggling to make ends meet. There might have been a tragedy in their lives. Someone might have been made redundant. There might be illness. There might have been a death. And actually, one of the things that attracted us to Encounter was, I think, that we saw in this community a desire to and a heart to bless other people. And there's generosity of spirit in this place that really blessed us, frankly. It does continue to bless us. But we have discovered that people give to this Dorcas Fund over and above what they normally give through their tithe and their normal giving. And so I want to encourage us corporately as a church family from time to time to think about the Dorcas Fund. We are going to, in the years that I had, have special Sundays, maybe Harvest, maybe Christmas, maybe Easter, when the offering that day goes into the Dorcas Fund over and above the normal giving that we have here. And I'm not, please don't hear that. I'm not saying this in a manipulative way, actually. I really hope you don't hear that. You know, we only want people to give if they want to give, and the Bible encourages us to give with joy. And if we can't give with joy, please don't do it, because it's not worth it, frankly. You know, but as we give and as we distribute, we're doing good together, as it were. And it's another way that we can make an impact in this community and the lives of people that we're connected to and relate to. And I really believe this. If we have to give out of our lack, we are committed to doing that. Because giving always reflects the generous heart of the Father who loved the world so much that he gave. So here's what I want us to grab today, okay? In the end, humility is all about understanding that what we have really is not necessarily, at the end of the day, for us. What I have is not necessarily for me. It's not about convincing ourselves either that we're unattractive. It's not about convincing ourselves that we're incompetent, okay? We need to be really, really wary of false, inverted sort of humility, as it were. It's not about beating ourselves up and saying, I am nothing. I am a worm, when you don't look like a worm, you know. You know, every now and again I hear people saying, Lord, please make me nothing. Do you know why I think when I hear that being prayed? I sort of, I understand the sentiment behind it, but you know what I really think? If the Lord wanted to make you nothing, he would have done that. He's completely capable of making us nothing if he wants to, okay? So I'm not even sure then that it's a very humble thing to pray, because you're praying against the will of God and what it is that he's called you to be, as it were. It's not about not having power or influence or position or resource, financial resource. It just means that we're using our money, our power, our influence, you know, our position to help other people out along the way. Why? Because we are foot washers. That's who we are. That's what we do. You know, those of us who want to follow Jesus, we wash feet. We serve. We have a voice, and we use that voice to speak up for those that don't have a voice. We have influence to come alongside people that don't have influence, and we try and influence on their behalf for their good. And any power that we might have at all exists, that we can come alongside those that don't have much power, and we help them out when they need help. And in the end, it comes down to a word that Sue used when we were praying earlier this morning. Choice. We choose. We choose. We choose pride or humility. We choose honor or humility. We choose the way of the kingdom or the way of the world. We choose whether we want to follow this man called Jesus, who gave up everything for us, including his life, dying a slave's death on a cross. And we go out into the world wearing the uniform of slaves to prove once and for all that life at the end of the day is not about me and it's not about us. It's about him. And it's living our lives with this overwhelming love that makes a difference in the lives of others. I choose. You choose. We choose.